I chose the optional gospel for year A as our gospel for this Sunday because it truly captures the call of the season of Lent, which is to remove all those scales in our eyes that hinder us to truly see our God-given dignity as sons and daughters of the Father. One of the interesting details that we heard right away from John the Evangelist about this gospel is that he emphasized, not just at the beginning, but in the middle and towards the end, that the man who was cured was born blind. He was born blind. He did not just become blind at some point of his life. From the very beginning, he was blind. The only thing that was known to him was darkness. He did not know how he looked like. He did not know how his parents look like. He did not know what creation is look like. There was this great obscurity. Not even obscurity, because when you say that something is obscure, you can still have a little sense of what it is. But it's total darkness. Total darkness. I could not even, probably a person who is totally blind from birth can only really explain this reality. We could only imagine what it is. But the extent of this darkness is only known to someone who has this experience or who is experiencing this. Total darkness. That's just on the physical level. That's just on the physical level. We also know that his disability has huge religious, cultural, and societal consequences, especially religious consequences. During the time of Jesus, just like with the other disabilities and the other sickness or infirmities, people, Jews, connected all the time disability with sin. That is why it was not surprising that in the gospel that we have heard today, the very first question that disciples asked to Jesus is, Lord, look at this person who was born blind. Who sinned? This guy or his parents? So there is this connection right away with sinfulness, that the more disabled one was, the more sinful the person was. So you see the religious stigma, religious ostracization that is connected with infirmity and disability. So we have the physical darkness. We have also the religious darkness that the person experiences, but also the economic darkness. Since the person cannot do anything, could not do anything because of his infirmity, he was just dependent on the charity and the pity of people around him. So you see this darkness in all different levels. Now, Jesus is telling us, take that darkness to our own spiritual life. Take that darkness, that experience of total blackness, obscurity, darkness in our own spiritual life. There. I don't even know what this would look like. I mean, I'm not perfect, of course, but I could not imagine what it is to be totally separated from God. It's just unimaginable. Not knowing who God is from the very beginning, not knowing who am I in relation to God, not having any idea that I am loved by God, by the Father. There is no greater darkness than that. There is no greater ostracization or poverty than that. And this is really what the gospel, what Jesus is trying to tell his disciples and us, that to be totally separated from God, this experience of, you know, whenever we find ourselves in sin, in a sinful life, all the more when we find ourselves in there, we experience this heightening of darkness in our own lives. The question that we can ask ourselves is, based on this analogy that Jesus is giving us, this cure, do I experience darkness in my own life right now? Do I have, what are the blind spots that I have in my life? You know, I don't always see clearly, even myself. You know, I don't always see clearly. I don't always appreciate who I am as created in God's own image and likeness. I don't always see my neighbor, my brothers and sisters as temples of the Holy Spirit. I don't always give them the respect and the love and care that are due to them as my brothers and sisters. Looking also in our own important relationships, do I need a new set of eyes? Do I need a new set of glasses in order for me to see clearly how God sees me and the persons that are entrusted to my care? This is a constant question that is being put forth on us. One thing, too, that is interesting in here is that as the man is given his sight, the Pharisees and even the disciples and the parents of the man were sliding all the more to darkness, to blindness. The guy is recovering slowly his sight, but the other groups who could physically see are sliding slowly to darkness because they were resisting the glory of God. They were resisting what God can actually do in our own lives, especially in the life of this guy. And why was that? Because they were fearful. They were fearful. Many times our fear blinds us. The not knowing the other, not knowing what's going on, puts us sometimes in this great fear, and we don't want to see what was going on. You know, the Pharisees saw all of this, but they refused to recognize it. Because why? Because they were afraid. What does this miracle require of us then? Do we have to give up our power because the Messiah is right here in our midst? The Son of God is already here. Do we need to reorient our lives? The Pharisees were not willing to give up all of these things, the comfort, their authority. They were not ready to say, we were wrong. They were fearful. Same thing with the parents of this man. We were told in the very gospel that they were afraid to be expelled from the synagogue if they even insinuate that it is Jesus who cured their son. So what did they say? Just ask him. I remember when I was in the seminary back in the Philippines, there was this guy who was about to be ordained. And, you know, before ordination, there's normally like a vote from the faculty and the formators. And that vote, though it's just a recommendation to the bishop, has a huge weight whether you're advancing to ordination or not. And there was this guy who was about to graduate, and during the evaluation, the formators and the faculty were divided whether to advance him to ordination or not. And the primary reason was that he was not a very good student academically. He almost flunked most of his subjects or courses. And the formators were like, okay, if a priest is a teacher of the faith, he should be able to, you know, to be able to impart the faith without much difficulty. And when they look at the core subjects in theology, he barely passed them. So they were like, okay, what are we going to do with this? To let the people suffer? Or should we just put a stop it now? But some people were like, no, you know, he's a good guy. Let's give him a chance. But half of the faculty and the formator said, no, this is not a good vocation for him. They see him just looking at the externalities, just looking at him based on those externalities. Then finally, since they could not make a decision, they decided just to submit to the bishop and say, Bishop, we are divided on this. Ultimately, it's your call. And after prayer and reflection, the bishop decided to ordain him. Let's give him a chance. In his first year in the priesthood, he was assigned in the most rural and far-flung place. It's like there's no transportation there. I mean, in most of the places that the parish covers, like little villages, you have to walk for days. It's like, okay, let's just put him there. This is going to be less damage to the people, since there's not a lot of people there in those places, so they put him there. But it was also a very difficult place because there was militia, there was insurgency, there were different kinds of things, you know, poverty. There's lots of difficult things in those places. And for many, many years, they were trying to expand the work of evangelization there by building chapels where people can gather so that they don't have to go to the main town, which would require several hours of walk. And you know, they were working on that for almost 15 years. And when they assigned this guy, in 3 years, he was able to build 3 chapels. The guy whom they taught, whom they saw at the beginning, was a liability, is the best local missionary in that diocese. The people loved him. The people loved him. It's amazing. Some of my friends were telling me that whenever he goes to the center, meaning to the pastoral center, to the chancery, where we normally have meetings and all of that, he will just show up like full of mud, you know, right here, because he would walk for a number of hours to get to the main town, and he had no time to wash or to change. And he would just show, it's like, where did you come from? People were asking. But you know, this guy has done so much in the work of evangelization in that diocese that it's one of the most peaceful places in that diocese nowadays. Before, it was one of the most dangerous. I've been talking too much already, sorry. My point about this is that God sees us with a different set of eyes. People might see us with a different set of eyes, but God sees us with a unique set of eyes. And He sees our greatest capacity. And where is our greatest capacity lies upon? that we are His sons and children, and therefore He sees what we can actually do. He sees what we're capable of if we are only able to participate in His grace. May we remove the scales that hinder us to see who we are in one another. And let us truly receive Him as our light, the true light that would enlighten our hearts and minds.